Sorry, guys.
So, I'm Jarrett Whetstone.
And I'm Max Kidd.
We're the station engineers at WAYOLP.
Way out, right?
In Rochester.
Not here.
That's right. So, today's presentation is on securing your studio. And, you know, one thing that we've noticed is, in addition to us, a lot of stations have problems stemming from having a lot of members and needing access to the building at all hours of the day. And there can be turnover in station members, there's not always full-time staff, how do you know who was there or who they brought with them? And so keeping your station, not necessarily just safe, but under control, and you feel like you know what's going on at your station, is extremely important. So we're going to talk about a system that we have installed at our station, and it's worked out so far.
Yeah. And on top of knowing who's at the station and when and stuff, protecting all the expensive crap that you bought, like your everything.
So there's a couple different ways to secure your station. You don't. You can just
that's one option.
Just give people keys and make sure they're people you trust, and you go from there. It's kind of a limiting way, and it's not really community. I don't really think that's a great option. But
yeah,
it is one that you can do.
I know there's stations that give certain people keys, and they're at the start of the day, and they just sort of pass it on to the next person or whatever who's coming in or whatever, but if somebody can't make their show for a certain day, what do you do? How do you get the key to the next person or whatever? It's
get locked out of the station.
It can be troublesome. The other option is hire a professional to do it, which is definitely an option. We'll get you a working system of some sort. They can install card access or something to that degree, but that can be very costly in this community. Stations that are mostly listener supported or whatever, it's a big cost, and you might be locked into a recurring service contract that you have to pay. There might be limited flexibility. They might only give you so many cards or whatever, where you have to pay to activate more cards or something like that. It's limited flexibility there. And the third option is what we decided to do, and let's do it ourselves. So we decided that we wanted to install an RFID access control system. When we were starting our station, we had probably, 100 applications or 50, 80 applications in, and it was like, okay, this is a lot of people. We talked about doing like a keypad, like punching a number thing. But what happens if someone leaves and the key, number change? Then we talked about, okay, we get a keypad with different codes for each person, and you program. Well, how do you program those all into the stupid keypad and remember who's got what, combination, whatever? So we decided to install an RFID access control system, and then on top of that, IP security cameras, so we can visually see who's at the station, what's going on.
So, the nice thing about the access control system we chose is that you have records of every number that's swiped in or scanned in, and when they scanned in, and what door they scanned in on. It can hold thousands of cards or numbers in memory. It can also hold thousands of records on the device of who went in and when they did. Fobs are, they're physical things. They can be cloned, but there's just one. I mean, if you were to give people keys, they could copy them, but in this case, you can turn their keys off. If they were to leave the station or lose their fob, someone else can't pick it up and scan it in because they told you that they lost it, and you shut it off.
Yeah. We have probably 75 volunteer show hosts, and I bet there's 100 keys floating around the community.
Oh, literally. Yeah. Literally. Yeah, so we have, 200 volunteers.
Members. People involved.
Yeah. And so we have, probably 200-something fobs issued.
And we've gone through maybe about 400 fobs.
Yeah. I mean, people lose them. It happens.
But you can't turn keys off.
Right.
You can make a lock, and then you got to cut all their keys.
Right. Somebody says, hey, I lost it.
It's not safe. Some
people would, not tell us if they lost it. I'm like, oh, I didn't want to. It's got to be some places. No, just tell us. It costs,
they
It costs nothing.
And people are worried
that they have to pay a replacement fee, so they wouldn't tell us. We're like, no, we'll give you
box 100 is like less than $20 on Amazon, which is great. So
can you prevent people from sharing their keys with someone else?
I mean, someone else could give someone else their fob.
Yeah.
But then they don't have it anymore.
You can also do a combination of fob and pin. Like, so you have a pin
something
with
you
a
have,
keypad.
You
know. So they would have to scan the fob and do the pin number. But, I mean, you can tell somebody the pin, right? So that's where the cameras come in, right? Because you can see, like, oh, wait, that, you know, says that a scanned in is this person, but that's not that person, you know.
Do you have an alarm system in addition to this, or this is the alarm system?
This kind of is. There are options, and we'll discuss it a little bit later. You can actually have different kind of alarms integrated with the access control system you get. I mean, there's a couple of caveats with that. A lot of these access control systems we're sort of recommending literally come from China and with incomplete specs and incomplete English. And so it's a little bit of a laundry with the features you're going to get, but you know, you at least have the essential ones that you need and essentially found all of them.
Which number of bit RFID tags did you get? I had looked at
26 bit.
Yeah, it's the
one. Okay,
26.
So it's not the one that's just one bit. It's that affordable. You can get more bits to have longer numbers.
Yeah, I mean, they'll come pre-programmed, and technically we're only using part of the number that's
okay.
on the fob, but it depends on what the device reads the fob as its unique ID.
Yeah.
Which is easy to see, because you'll scan it and be like, oh, I don't know this number, but it will display the number, so you could add it to the system.
So the thing, going back to the alarm system thing, we have an alarm system, but we were thinking about is like, do we want to use this? And the thought is like, well, when are we going to activate it if we have people in literally 24/7? So.
And you don't run unattended at all during the day? People.
We
during the day.
During the day, not really.
Sometimes at night, there's a few hours between like 3 and 6 a.m., which like we can't easily fill a slot for.
Yeah.
But you know, everything's recorded on camera and. We taught people to shut the door. That actually takes a lot of work.
Yep.
Like a lot of work.
And the cameras, we thought about cameras, and you know, it just seems like an uncommunity-like intrusion.
No, there's
it's
solution.
Really, it's really, we'll talk about
that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. I'm jumping your head.
No, so the other half of the system is security cameras. And the NVR is a network video recorder. They're super easy to install. You screw them up. It'll be one wire, just an Ethernet cord that goes into them, and power can be delivered over that to power the camera. And the nice part about the NVR is that a lot of these NVRs are kind of made by one company called Hikvision in China, and then they get rebranded. But they have a very extensive set of features. So you can set cameras to motion capture, continuous record, you can set the regions for motion capture, you can set the sensitivity on it. It has alarms in it too, like alarm on motion. There are outputs, so you can technically connect this with your other system and then find a way to notify you when something happens on a camera.
Yeah, it can send you an email when it does like a motion.
Yeah,
we don't
use
any of that functionality, but it's an option. You know, it's flexible.
A lot of the network cameras, they're not that expensive, and you can get 1080p video out of them. You know,
very nice, like, pretty crisp, you know, video.
But we put a 2 terabyte disk into our NVR, and we have well over a month of storage of 4 cameras. Only one of them is on continuous, the rest are all on motion. Of course, the whole thing can be managed remotely.
You said 4 gigabyte drive?
Just a 2. 2 terabyte.
No, terabyte.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting.
Can you use the camera for a web stream also, or is that...
Well, technically, yes. The NVR will stream it out, or you can connect directly to the camera. The NVR will typically accept the camera feed and then output its own feed separate from its own user interface.
So, there's sort of a...
It's like a pass-through thing. It's not actually well-documented, but you can find instructions for accessing it. So, what do we need to install all this stuff? The access control system, the camera system. You don't want people playing with it or touching it or interfering with it. So you need like a locked room or a locked closet. You want to keep this equipment safe. So people aren't accessing the wires or tampering with it or disabling it or accessing it physically. You can log in directly on the NVR with a mouse. Assuming they know the password. Or if someone is in the station, you don't want them immediately running to the equipment and ripping it apart. You know, try to keep it at least a little bit safe. These devices typically aren't very network secure. You'll want them on a separate network, nothing that someone with public Wi-Fi at your station can get to, maybe like a separate internal Wi-Fi network, because they really aren't that secure. Lots of times there are vulnerabilities in different versions of firmware for these kinds of devices. Sometimes they actually accept login without authentication entirely.
Yeah, so you want to keep it sort of segmented so that somebody, you know, who's on your Wi-Fi can't log in to see your cameras, can't log into your access control.
Can't open your doors for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so that's something else.
That's a studio, right?
It's not just the voyeurism, it's the unlocking the door.
Yes, exactly.
So you can't access this remotely yourself?
We can. Because we've set up a virtual private network it's kind of a more advanced than new, but it can be done. We'll discuss it a little more later. Mm-hmm. But to set all this stuff up, you just need some wire. You need some Cat5e network cable, and it should probably be plumb and rated because I assume you'll be running it in your ceiling and your walls. There's a website called Deep Surplus which sells boxes of cable, and it's one of the cheaper places to get it. You'll need a crimp tool that's not very expensive that can be found on that website or Amazon. And then the best $10 you'll ever spend is on a network cable tester, because after you crimp that cable yourself, well, how do you know it works without playing guess and check? Or which wire doesn't work?
Yeah. You can also go and buy store-bought like network cables, right?
That's true.
But,
what's the fun of that?
Right. Yeah.
The thing is, like, if you're running hundreds of feet of wire,
yeah,
you have to get a box of cable, get 1,000 feet of it, and just go from there. Because you'll spend a fortune on patch cables.
You don't just use a voltometer to test the.
You can, but that's very time consuming.
More so than the tester.
No, the tester, you plug both ends in.
Test
with a dongle
at once.
Yeah, test make sure all the wires at once. They'll all just light up when they go through.
Okay.
If they don't,
very small. Contacts and when you're my age, 70s.
Hard to see that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think you're a bit of a masochist.
Okay. I'm also broke. I already own a voltometer.
No, that'll work. And then what would be the access controller, Max, take this one?
Sure. So you need to go to, you don't need to, right? You pick your vendor or whatever. Amazon has it, right? No cost to action. Amazon has them. AliExpress has them. AliExpress seems to have a wider variety of them. The thing that you want to look for, there's a number of different varieties. So there's sort of like standalone ones, and we'll talk about this on the next slide. There's sort of standalone ones that just mount next to the door, and it's all self-contained. The reader and the controller and everything is all in one, and it's mounted on the outside of the door. So when the thief comes and bashes it off the door and connects a 9-volt battery to the electric door strike to open the door, then you're screwed. So what you want to...
Seriously?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something to think about, right? So what you want to look for is one that is just a controller that has connectors on it to, you know, connect a reader, to connect the door strike. We'll talk a little bit more about door strikes later. You want to have one that has a network jack so you can plug it in and manage it from the computer. If you don't get one of those, a lot of the times it's a sort of confusing interface. You have to, like, push this button and then scan the fob and whatever. It's way easier to use a computer program than just manage it over the web. And you'll find ones that can do a single door, but generally these type that we're talking about can do like two or four doors, all on the same controller. And you need a power supply for it. There's a brand of power supplies called Meanwell that's pretty good. Generally it's just like a 12-volt power supply or whatever. And you'll want to get one that can power your access controller and your door strikes, so you can do a little bit of math there. Add up the number of amps per the door strike and the controller, and you can get like a 2 or 3 amp power.
So which of these lines were you saying about whacking it off with the hammer and putting a 9-volt battery on it? Was the controller itself? Oh, okay, you guys have already had this. All right.
Yeah. So then you also need door strikes, which are the device that physically goes on the door frame to allow the door to open when the electrical signal is activated from the controller. And then you need the card reader, which just basically you know, reads the fob or card when you tap it up against it and sends that information to the controller. So
let's go over in
more detail.
Oh, well,
this one?
Oh, let's go to the picture first.
Yeah,
wait, I sort of talked about it. What's the thing?
Okay.
Oh, I kind of talked about this. So there's a model number there and some keywords to search for. These slides, I believe, will be on the GRC website probably when we're done. Or you can come and grab a card from us and we can send it to you or just email us.
And that's the one with the 9-volt business, the C3400?
No, that's the all-in-one. Here, go to the next.
That's the one you want, not the one you don't want.
Yeah. Well, it says do not want there.
So here you go.
Some examples.
Yeah, so these, like, all-in-one ones are, like, what, $20 or whatever. They just, that's the whole unit right there. It's got, like, a keypad or it's got the RFID thing, and, like, you program it from that keypad itself.
Can you imagine programming 200 members into one of those?
You'd
pull your hair out.
That's the other part of it. It's not easy to manage. You don't get access records from that because there's no way to see that, right? So what you really want is these on the right, which, you know, go install in a closet. They have a network connection. You install the computer program, and you can access them. Or they sometimes have a web interface. You just log in on the web interface, and you can see all that stuff.
And they're really not that expensive.
And then you just run low voltage wiring to all your doors?
Yep.
Yeah, back old time. All
awesome.
Yeah.
Is the picture next?
No, not quite. So we talked about the controller. Let's talk about the door strike. What's a door strike? Well, the strike plate on a door is the thing that the latch goes into so it doesn't just swing open. So you have to use it to turn the handle. With an electric strike plate, what happens is part of the plate itself releases. So the door stays locked, but there's nothing in the way of the bolt. So it can just open. That way, if someone has a key, the key will still work. So if you're in a shared building with other tenants, you could still have your electric strike on that front door, and your members can get in. They don't need a key, and anyone else with a key can still get in. It's really convenient. There are a couple different types of door strikes, and which one you need depends on the size and shape of your door. And door strikes typically operate in two different ways. They can FS or FO, as they are typically labeled, which is fail secure or fail open. And so if your system turns off, fail secure means the door will be locked. Or fail open means it will unlock. And typically, you'll be using the fail secure mode, because that means the strike's totally unpowered in normal operation.
Yeah, so basically, if the power goes off, you don't want the door to be open in most situations, right?
This doesn't affect egress for those people who are already inside.
It doesn't. It's not like one of those magnetic locks.
Yeah, so that is the one thing that you need to... So there's a difference. Like, we just talked about door strikes here. For doors that maybe don't have, like, strikes or knobs or whatever...
Or a way to open with
it. Or, like, a double door. They have, like, these magnetic ones that, like, you mount, like, a plate on the door and then a magnet on the door frame. And so basically... Those, if you have fail secure, you can't get out without applying like voltage to the. So there's an exit button generally, but if the power's out, you want to make sure that you can get out of the door. So you need to make sure that you can.
Big legal issue.
Yes, but we don't recommend those magnetic ones in most cases. That's really, yeah.
So, again, I understand it depends on the mechanism on the door, but with fail secure, you can. Potentially still use a key.
Correct.
Yes.
Got it. The panic bar hardware on a crash door still works.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And then one thing to know is that some strikes can be adjusted to work in either mode of operation. So we have some photos of essentially the two main types of strikes you'll find. The strike on the left is called a rim strike. It goes on one of those crash doors you described that have the bar. Essentially, it takes place part of the frame, and when it's powered, there's two little solenoids in here that release these catches, and so the flaps come right open. Those flaps open right up. And then on this kind of strike, which is just the regular strike, I don't know if it has a special name, but this piece here will actually it'll be able to retract when someone pulls on the door. And so you can see that, you know, if this door opened the other way, you need a rim strike to sit along in here. And so which one you need just depends on your door. The room strikes tend to be a little bit more expensive.
Yes.
You know, there's caveats. Some, you know, difficulty is going to vary to install these depending on the door itself.
So the door frame on the left is an aluminum door frame. It's like the entrance door to the building, so it's a glass and aluminum door. So that's a fairly low profile, like a thin stripe to fit there. That's mounted, screwed onto the aluminum. The other one is in a door frame that had like, I think it was like cement filled or concrete filled door frame.
Chisel all that.
So I spent forever chiseling it, and then like once I got through it, there's like a metal box like behind it, so I had to like Dremel out the metal box from the concrete.
Oh my god.
You'll probably need a Dremel to install a door. You'll probably need a set of chisels and a spade bit to install it on a wooden door.
But, you know, it's all just the hand tools, not hand tools, the power tools.
Don't screw it up, though.
Yeah, you want to make sure you can close the door.
Maybe a locksmith would be good for that part.
You know,
yes. They'll probably install it for you, or maybe they'll even sell you a strike. Yeah. So the most like common cheap tag that is used for access control is called the EM4100 or TK4100. There's a couple different varieties that are pretty much the same. They're low frequency, 125 kilohertz. They're these little blue things, which I think it shows. There. A lot of them have like a number inscribed on them. That's the tag number. So you can actually put that, you know, read it off of here and put it into the access control software, or you can just scan it on the reader and put it into the software.
It just occurred to me they make portable scanners that you could put this in key pieces of things that you think might walk out the door. Then you could just take the scanner and be within whatever number of feet the specification is and figure out where the thing went.
These tags are real low power. They'll only work for a couple inches.
Okay. Yeah. So that's not the kind I was thinking.
Yeah. There are other tags that do that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's high frequency ones.
Okay. Because I was just thinking, wow, this is a great way to track that disappeared hand recorder.
You can also find on AliExpress higher frequency tags.
So it's the higher frequency tags if I want to put them on my recorder hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's also the ones, I don't know if your workplace has, you know, card access or something like that. Generally, they'll use stuff from HID, which is like one of the leading, you know, access control companies. Their cards and reader systems are a lot more expensive, supposedly more secure, but extra dollars, this works pretty well. So you can't get HID cards to work. You can buy them on AliExpress, but they won't work with this system. Readers, a lot of them are weatherproof. You have to decide whether you need that or not. You can get a cheaper one if it's just inside. Like I said, some of them have an optional like pin pad on them combined with the reader so that you can do fob or card plus the pin number, you know, for extra security. Or you can do like guest access using only pin number. There's some flexibility there. And then we'll just have to make sure that the fobs that you get match the type of reader that you have. And like I said, that's EM4100 for the access control systems that we're talking about. And there's lots of colors. That's very important.
And there aren't easily available hacker tools for breaking these systems?
Well, not to break in. The hacking tools around the systems typically work around cloning existing box. So it would be like copying a key, only it's better because you could turn the key off.
So like those James Bond movie type scenarios where there's like a device that goes through all the combinations?
You could do that, but when you put in the wrong code, it like
beep beep.
Yeah, there's like this 2 second beep. I can't imagine going through millions of combinations waiting for the time consuming.
So just this time consuming is
Bond movies are not even requiring
the hack. At that point, you just take the window out of the basement.
I got you. Could we pause for a minute just for me to like, reassess?
It's fiction.
Okay. Life dream dash.
So what do we need for these security cameras, Jared? Huh?
Oh, well, we need ones that are powered over Ethernet. You don't have to, but I recommend it. And then,
so that basically means they're powered over the same cable that is providing data to them.
The network connection.
And it plugs right into the back of the NVR, the network video recorder, and it provides the power. So it's literally one cable to each camera, which is very nice.
We would recommend that you get at least 1080p. You can find lower resolution cameras or higher resolution cameras, but, you know, you have to make sure that the NVR says it can do 4K if you're going to do that. Plus, you'll pay a lot more and need a lot more hardware space. The network video recorder, I think we got ours at Monoprice. Is everyone here familiar with Monoprice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're great.
What do you call it, Monoprice?
Yeah,
Monoprice.com. They sell cheap cables. You ever need a cable for anything, they've got it, and it'll probably cost you $1 plus postage.
And they'll sell you one of them.
They will sell you one of them. You don't need to buy an entire shipping cable, shipping container to get that good price.
Depending
on what your needs are, I would suggest you get an NVR that at least has four ports. Usually, if you'll want an NVR that supports PoE, because it will actually put the power over the Ethernet line to the device.
You can actually, a lot of the times, buy the IP camera and NVR as a bundle. That way you know that they'll work together. You can also get, just be careful, because there's also bundles that are not IP-based camera. They're just conventional video. And those are, like, lower quality.
Yeah, usually they'll be lower resolution.
And you have to use, like, coaxial cable, like, Cat5 cable, Ethernet is way...
So when you say conventional, you mean it puts out an NTSC analog signal?
Yes.
Okay.
Or something analogous to it that the device can...
Okay.
And then you need a hard drive to go in the network video recorder, because a lot of them don't come with a hard drive. If you get the kit, sometimes the kit will come with a hard drive.
If you do have to get a hard drive for your unit, Western Digital makes different colored drives, and one of their colors for a specific application is called purple. And the purple drives are meant to be used in continuous use.
Because it's always recording to the drive, right?
Yeah. Once your NVR has, like, its monthly footage and it's full, it just deletes the old stuff and then puts the new stuff on there continuously. So it'll never not be in use, unless you're motion only or something like that. And then you might need a monitor, keyboard, or mouse. Sometimes it'll come with a little dinky mouse, but you'll probably need to supply the monitor.
It's the dinkiest mouse.
It's not a good mouse, but how often do you have
it? Yeah, right?
And so you can actually, there's an interface on the NVR that you can control with a mouse and a monitor, or a lot of them you will connect remotely to and use its web interface.
So you could have a monitor up that's just always showing, like, the cameras or whatever.
Let's see.
Bounce back and forth.
I know, right?
Which is a good way to do this.
Should have done one than the other.
Next time. Alright, so how do we do this access control thing? Okay. Or how does the user do it? What is this for? We're just explaining the big picture. User swipes the card in the spot and it beeps. Reader sends the card number to the access controller. Access controller looks up in its list and says, this person is authorized to access this door at this time. Then the access controller will activate send power to the stripe, and then beep the reader to say, yep, you're in. And then the relay, the door is unlocked. They open the door. Get inside. That's a basic idea.
Okay, well, let's talk about how we put this together.
Any questions before...
I don't know if we stated that at the beginning. We've been answering questions, so I guess we might have to state that. If you have any questions, just ask them.
I have a question. Yes. Oh, will you take questions while you're doing the presentation?
Oh, Jerry.
We have like a happy drone shot. You'll mount your controller on the wall. Leave some space. They're usually mounting holes to put these things on the wall, especially because it's essentially just a circuit board with connections on it. And you'll connect the readers with your Cat5 cable. You probably won't have to terminate it because there won't be a jack, but you'll just line the colors up with whichever wire is going to the controller.
So it's got a little like screw terminal and shove the wire in and you tighten it down.
Like we mentioned before, installing the door strikes can be a little tricky depending on your door material and the strike you're installing. But you'll wire those up and connect the wires all the way back to your controller. So at the end here, you should have wires from your readers, wires from your door strikes. It should both just be running back to where that control circuit board is. And, Max here is recommending that you get the fish sticks from Harbor Freight to pop things over your ceiling or through the wall, because running wires through walls is not always fun or easy.
So it's just very frustrating. Fiberglass like rods that screw together that allow you to push the wire and pull the wire.
So once you connect everything to the controller, you're essentially good, except for programming it.
Except for everything else?
Well, yeah, right. So here's our reader at the station. You have connections for the readers. We have a model that does four doors. So it has reader A, B, C, and D, and lock A, B, C, and D. So the reader will have five connections. One's for power, one's for ground. There are two data lines, and then there's one for the LED. The reader that you have will have these five same connections. You just need to make sure that these wires end up at those connections. They'll be labeled probably almost identically. One might be data plus and data minus. Just make sure you're consistent with how you set it up.
It might have a separate like LED and buzzer like wires on the reader. You can just connect those together so it beeps and flashes.
You mentioned ability to carry a certain number of amperage, and that's Ma Bell wire, which doesn't look like it would carry much amperage.
You don't need that much amperage to run over it. The coil mm-hmm. in that will be hundreds of ohms at the least. You know, shouldn't be
so you don't crazy. Have any trouble with this getting
wires. You don't
wires
have any trouble, and then you know the door is open for at RC about 3 seconds.
Okay.
As long as it connects with the coil, you shouldn't cause a fire. if you're worried, or if you have a real long run, definitely use thicker gauge.
Yeah.
Use something a little more, but you only need it for the door strike or side.
Mm-hmm. The reader doesn't use much power.
Yeah, the reader really doesn't use much at all.
On the strike side, we actually double up.
The wires. Oh, I see that strategy.
Yeah, we cheat. Okay. You know, listen to our own advice here. But you'll notice that on this controller you have NC common and NO. And so normally open, normally closed, and common. So if your strike is going to be unpowered, which it would be if it's fail secure, you're gonna hook it up to the normally open side.
So basically what happens is when the person scans their card and the reader says, yep, this person's activated, the little switch inside the relay switches to the what's normally open, but now it's closed and closes the circuit between common and NO.
So power comes in on the common, and then when the door is active, it connects down to here and lets it through to power the strike and open the door.
So can... in our scenario, we want this, which is awesome, but we'd also want an intercom to the person on the air and a remote latch release that the person on the air could...
You can do a remote latch. Yeah, a lot of controllers will have a option for that. Not included in this picture, there's a connection to hook up a fire alarm. There's a connection for an alarm to be hooked up to it. And there's definitely ways to accommodate opening an arbitrary door via a button.
And so just to check I heard you correctly, the way you've configured your system, you're sending power out on the normally open output side.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
And just in on power going to the strike. It's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this gives you a little bit better picture.
So power supply connects to the wall. You get power out, and you connect it to your access controller so it can be powered. You send power into your 12 volts into the common side of your relay for the door, and then the other side goes to the strike, and then the strike goes back to your ground. So that's sort of the circuit. And then the reader is very straightforward. It's just straight connections for the reader.
Is there a distance that it has to be within the cable rock to be? Like for the card reader, how close does it have to be to the access controller?
It's going to vary, I'd say.
Hundreds of feet? Or? You can do hundreds of feet.
I think our longest run is probably about 100 feet.
Yeah.
At the station, that works fine.
You could probably do maybe 300 or 500 feet.
It's a pretty low data rate, I'm sure.
Yeah. You're using Cat 5 for all that?
Yeah, it should be fine.
Especially because I think it's
and you're running a separate line to the reader and to the strike?
Yes, separate line.
Because we double up the wires on the strike. Yeah, so we do four and four, so that way it can carry the higher power to the strike.
Security camera is a little more straightforward.
Yeah.
you'll just plug them in. After you install the hard drive. There's not a whole lot to say about it other than crimping the cables so they have the end. And if you've ever crimped a Cat 5 cable before, it's not that difficult, but it requires a little finesse.
Yeah, so basically the steps are you have the cable, you cut the length of the cable that you need, or you pull the length of cable that you need, and then you get your crimp and the strip tool, and you take the outside insulation of the wire off, you arrange the wires in the appropriate color order, and you can look that up online. Like I said, there's YouTube tutorials, whatever. You arrange them in the right color order, slip the plug on, and then squeeze the crimp tool on it, so that way it makes the connections. You can do that for both ends.
And then don't forget to test them.
Yes, for the cable tester.
Otherwise, you'll regret it. After you run it through the wall.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Then you just basically plug it in and turn it on.
Yeah. So jumping back to access control, we're configuring. Once you plug it into the network, it will have a IP address that's going to be the default IP address. You can connect directly to it. There'll be a default username and password. You'll set the date and time. You'll change it probably to DHCP to join your network. And time zones. At least that's what they're referred to on our particular controller. The whole concept of time zones is that you'll have cards, you'll have doors, and then they'll have times assigned to them so that they could not enter the building at a certain time, or they'll be in a different group. You know, if you're first shift or second shift, you can try to make sure that people are only there when they're supposed to be, but I think we really haven't used that feature at all.
The only thing that, you know, maybe you only want your regular members to be able to access the station from, you know, 6 a.m. to midnight or something like that. So you can have, like, a standard member, like, time zone, right? And then, you know, you can have a, like, all access sort of time zone and stuff like that. And those can be per door as well. So, like, we have a, like, our engineering pit / storage space. We only, like, the leadership team has access to that door.
So that's where we keep the controller.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to have control access to multiple locations, like different buildings?
Different buildings are going to be tricky. You're probably going to want two separate controllers for them.
But you could use the same key fobs.
You could use the same key fobs. Yep.
And if you network the two controllers together, you can use the same software, I think, to manage both of them.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to manage them. There's the web interface, if your controller has a web interface. The web interface is kind of janky.
Usually.
The Chinese software that runs on Windows is slightly less janky. And I sort of recommend that because you can put people's names in there and associate to the hot numbers, stuff like that.
Whoops.
Did you have a question?
I do, and it's about the time zone, so I don't know if you can answer it right now. Sure. But I was going to ask fairly easy to go back in and make adjustments as needed.
Yes.
Okay, so like if say in the just within a certain season you don't want one to access
certain
parts of the building.
If you had
there's like a holiday thing in here or something where like holiday like you can lock people out or something.
Okay. I think the way you probably have to do is with the valid date. If that's enforced. Where you could have the time zone, I think, deactivate at a certain period.
I mean, you've got to love this interface, right? Take a look at the group setting for guys when 0+. What does that mean?
What does that mean? We don't know.
Well, duh. When 0+.
The takeaway from that is when you get one of these controllers,
take some time, play with it, see what the different options do.
Because you'll be playing a little guess and check.
Yeah.
There's probably a support group online for like how to read the manual.
More like a support, like a therapy group.
Yeah.
So it's
you're gonna write a Chinglish translation.
Yeah. So you're paying $100 for the controller. You know, compare that to the $1,000 you spend. I guess it's worth a little bit of your time. It may be worth a little bit of your time.
Well, that's the whole idea.
Right. Do it yourself. Yeah. What the hell does anti-pass back mean?
I don't know, but all I know is that on our particular controller, we have to control people's access by disabling the the door time zone for them, because the enable thing, when you, if you disable someone's card, but they're still assigned in the time zone, it's like you didn't disable it.
Oh.
So, test your controller, because
how
there's going to be
a... discover the workaround for that, because that, that must have been several six-packs.
Yeah. It wasn't that crazy.
You call Kaspersky, though.
Yeah, right? and more about kind of what we just talked about.
Oh, that's
about.
The same slide.
Oh, is it?
Oh, no, there's more, yeah. Yeah, so the, like I said, then the next step is really just adding the card numbers to the controller. And like I said, the Windows program is a lot easier because you can sort of do it in bulk anyways. Mm. There's better. So I think that like C3-401 is made by a company called ZK Access, or there's a company called ZK Access that markets it. And they, I think, have
could you go
more
back
English-friendly software with it.
Yeah, the one that you get will probably be a little nicer than the one we got, just because we got ours several years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm if it's a web interface, what does it matter what operating system you use?
It doesn't. But there's extra control software that has more features in it. It makes a little more sense than the web interface.
So it works remotely over the web, but it's not browser based.
It's not browser based. That's right. Yeah. There's a this part that we're showing you here in the slides, that's browser based. But there's a separate piece of software that connects over the network. That's not browser-based. It just runs the native application on Windows. And it's a little nicer when looking at the data, because here we can have a whole list of card numbers, but we don't have someone's name with it. We have to associate that separately or use this other software. At the station, there's actually another way to control this device using the same protocol that its software uses that we're trying to integrate into our portal system. So
it's just a matter of capturing packets over the network and decoding the protocol.
Yeah.
So some of them will actually provide like a software developer of details how to talk to the controller.
The only
if you have people that are programmers that want to get into that, it's possible.
Yeah. The only issue with that is that it literally means there's an extra open port on the device over the network. It's totally unauthenticated.
So that's why we're saying putting it on a separate network.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
And it's all unencrypted.
Yes.
On the network.
Yes. Although, your mileage may vary with the controller you get. It looked like from some of the documentation that there was a way to turn on some sort of encryption with a fixed key in ours, but I think it can't be done through the web interface or something like that. It's not something that I really want to play around with.
Set it and forget it, and then just add in fobs and remove fobs.
So a quick question about that. There's no place to associate a number with a person's name?
In the web interface. In their software, there's a way to do it, which is why using the software is a little more user-friendly than just the web interface. Otherwise, you'll find yourself searching for, in my list I have so-and-so this number, and they lost their fob. I'll go find that number in the system and turn the fob off. It's easier to do it in their software versus a web interface because it will associate a name.
And so you can do that locally with the software that it comes with?
Yeah.
And it does associate the names with it?
Yes.
I would recommend running the software on one computer. Don't try and do it between multiple computers, because it stores the access logs. So it'll download the access logs from the controller onto the copy of the software that you're using. So if you do it on multiple computers, you have some of the access logs on one computer, some on the other. So I dedicate one computer to running the software.
And it wants a Windows computer to do this?
Yeah,
generally.
Will it work on Win 7 or is it picky?
It works on Windows 7. At least the particular one we have.
Why?
I imagine newer ones. What's that?
Why?
I don't know.
Try it. Is it a .NET app,
I don't think so.
With our luck, it's probably VB.
I said, it depends on the vendor as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, gosh, back to the cameras.
Yeah. Okay, so configuring the security cameras are pretty easy. It will come with a default password. You can log in over the network and change it, or you can do it local on the device. Everything, it's actually a pretty decent user interface. But again, keep this on the same network, your secure network, that you keep the access controller on. Just because you don't want other people poking around in it. Just because you're right, it's like you mentioned before, Steve, like a violation of people's privacy or something like that is how they might feel. But those cameras have been extremely useful when people have misplaced items, things they left in the studio. When it's like, okay, we're not broadcasting anything.
What's going on
in the studio right now?
Yeah.
That's been a real big one.
Yeah, that and like somebody calls and says, I can't figure out why automation isn't playing. What's going on? You can check the cameras, and you can literally, we have one that's behind our console. We didn't realize it when we installed it how useful it would be, because we can literally look and see, oh, that button is not lit. Press that button. So it's super, super helpful.
And this is
so. You know, it might feel like you're doing a surveillance state or something like that, but like, I think if you explain to your members or programmers that, you know, it's an investment in the security of the studio, not only
in you. You
yes.
The programmer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the programmer, so we can know who's been at the studio. And, you know.
So you have all this on that same virtual private network so that you can call, you can essentially
remote.
Skype in and tell them, oh, you missed this button, or I see that yada wasn't done right. Or.
Can you read the monitor of the,
no,
the automation
system?
Well, we can, remote desktop.
You can remote that.
And see that when someone needs assistance. But, you know, people do ask for help all the time.
Yeah.
We have we have Slack.
I mean, we have 200,
computer.
You know, 200 yeah. whatever
Slack.
People.
Slack is like a chat application. And so there's a special channel where people text in that will show up in there. If they need assistance, they can just type into it and we get the message and we'll respond. We can't read the screen from the camera, but a lot of the board buttons are illuminated. And so we can say, oh, no, it's not working because that's not on.
So, that's a whole other presentation.
Yeah, right.
These are two separate pieces of hardware and software?
Two separate pieces of hardware and software.
So how do you keep a really slick hacker from breaking into a virtual private network?
Well, they need encryption keys to get in.
Yeah.
I mean, you
make that sound impossible.
Well,
it's
not,
difficult.
It's very
difficult. Yeah,
okay,
it's
sufficiently
not practical
difficult.
For someone else to be able to do it.
I saw a movie where
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right, What's next?
Yes, you can set up cool little things in your camera. You can have them display the time. You can have them labeled, all from this nice interface. It's really convenient. This is actually the door outside the studio.
Yeah, I would recommend having the time and date on there, because if you ever need to provide footage to like law enforcement or something, you know, having it timestamped with that information is, I think, probably very important.
Extremely.
So can you have it so that it's, you know, it's recording somewhere out of the way where, you know, the hard drive won't get stolen and so forth, but where people in the control room can see the front door?
Yeah, I
that's
mean,
possible.
You could run the monitor cable, so there's like a monitor that plugs into the NVR, and you can run a cable into the studio.
Yeah.
Can you have multiple monitors? Or
if you had like a splitter, you could.
A splitter, or you could run
VLC and connect to the stream of the video of the camera you want
over the network.
So are these HDMI outputs for the monitors, or is it?
I think it's VGA on
it's
the.
It's VGA. Maybe some might have HDMI.
That's possible.
It depends on the box.
But yeah, you could stream it over the network to a computer so someone can look at it, or you could run a monitor out.
Yeah.
How long can a run can you go
you
with a monitor?
You probably have to get like an distribution.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it depends how far you want to go. You're going like right through the wall to something else, you probably go 15 or 20 feet. Yeah. I don't see where you could.
Yeah, I would think some of these. DNRs also offer a web interface?
Yes.
This is
the
web interface, but if you use the web interface, you've got to give out the password.
Oh,
you don't necessarily want to do
that. You can't have multiple users?
You can have multiple users, but there's some permission control, but it's
not a lot.
I actually haven't tried to see if it was like a view only.
Yeah.
But then, you know, if it disconnects and someone's got to log back into it and kind of have to know how it works.
Right.
There's text. There are different modes. I mentioned before that you can set each camera to operate in a different mode, and you can actually set the time of the day and the day itself and what mode it's operating in.
So, like, maybe during the day you have a continuous recording, and then after a certain part of the night it switches to motion recording.
And then there's also motion detection. You can see that we try to avoid catching people going to this other door over here and only looking at people who are operating our door. So that way there's less events. So we can say, oh, someone went in here. This is with the door. Or someone's fob didn't work because we forgot to turn it on. Who was that? Let's go look and see who tried to swipe it. And then, of course, there's adjustable sensitivity. You'll be playing guess and check to figure out what's the right magic number to make it work. That's sort of the summary.
This is just bonus round of like other things that you can do with this hardware. So like I said, the Access Controller has a software development kit. So if you're savvy with writing software, you can write your own or integrate it with other stuff that you have. There's a way, if you have the Windows Access Control software, that it can like capture a picture when somebody swipes the fob. You can also have the network video recorder like send you an email if it detects motion on a certain camera or something like that, or I think there's sometimes an external input, so like maybe you would connect an input from your Access Controller to tell the NVR to take a picture and email it to you or something like that. So there's some options there. And then, like we mentioned, remote access to the cameras and Access Controller. So, like we said, we really recommend using a VPN, or maybe having a computer that has two network cards. One of them is connected to your sort of private network, and the other one is connected to your regular network and can access the internet. And then you could maybe run TeamViewer on that computer to do remote access.
Or just use remote desktop.
Or remote desktops.
That would be a workaround for it.
So yeah, remote access is handy. You just have to be careful about how you.
Sometimes you can buy a nice router that will literally come with very easy to VPN and client software, and you can just get onto your network remotely without too much difficulty. Ours is a little more advanced.
Is this what is logging in basically a VPN solution?
Logging in is more like a remote access.
It's like TeamViewer remote desktop.
So VPN basically is like if you log in, it's like your computer's plugged into the network, so you can access all of the network resources, just like you were at the station plugged into the network or on the Wi-Fi. Whereas
from there, you could use remote desktop.
Or you could connect directly to the device because you're on the network.
As opposed to like log me in, you'd have to be like, you're moving like the cursor on the computer, right, directly. So that was kind of a lot.
Kind of a dense presentation.
How are you guys feeling? Did that...
Excellent.
Very good.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could drill into a little more detail on how I could have one of those cameras shared with the board operator that's behind a wall and can't see the front door or something like that.
Oh, so there's one thing I should mention. So you can actually, if you wanted to plug into a spare network, like a camera port on the back of the NVR, because it's just like a network switch on the, back of the NVR. So you could plug into one of those spare ports with a computer or something like that, and then access the camera's stream directly using VLC or something like that. You can send us an email.
Oh, okay.
So I believe these slides, we're going to try and get them on the GRC website. Hopefully.
I would recommend people give you their cards personally.
Yeah.
I mean, no slight intent.
No. We have our cards here as well. If you want to come get a card and shoot us an email,
I'll work on it. I'm going to send you an email.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Do you recommend specific video? I don't remember if you had that on there, like a brand or a source.
But the ones from Monoprice, the video recorder, and then the cameras. Monoprice also has the cameras.
Indoor-outdoor and all that?
Yeah, the ones we have are indoor-outdoor. I think the set is like a bullet camera, is what they call it.
But it's also got the dome ones.
Yeah, also got a dome. You can get the, it's called PTZ, and you can move the camera or adjust the zoom. And this software will have also an interface for controlling that.
Unrelated, Monoprice also sells nice little and even larger studio monitor speakers. Who would have thought?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Pretty, really decent price.
Powered or unpowered?
Powered. And they might have unpowered also, but I know they have powered.
Oh, I'm not going that way.
Is it N-E-L-L-E-Y? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
Oh,
no! Oh, came out. There you go. Yeah. Mine's
good for solar energy.
Oh, cool.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming.
And we just moved into a space and still has the old key deadbolt down. So
yeah.
This is really timely because we're like, well, this is going to suck.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Plus, they always forget. Some people will always forget to do the deadbolt, which means the station's not locked at all.
Right.
And then the deadbolt's not even legal by egress requirements. So we got to get rid of the deadbolt anyway.
Yeah, I'm in
a similar situation.
But they got away with it because the building's just been rented to people that don't have a lot of people going through. So they left the deadbolt down there for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's all wallowed out, so, you know.
Yeah, ours barely catches.
Yeah, right? So I'm like, well, we're going to have to do something about this anyhow.
Yeah, cool.